Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
We maintain the peace through our strength. Weakness only invites aggression.
Trust but verify.
Well, I've said it before and I'll say it again. America's best days are yet to come.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
This is Reaganism, a podcast dedicated to exploring where the Reagan movement lives today. I'm Roger Zackheim, your host, director of the Ronald Reagan Institute in Washington, D.C.
On this episode of Reaganism, Team Reagan set up shop at the Conservative Political Action Conference to hear how the 40th president's legacy continues to impact folks at one of the biggest convenings of conservatives in the country. President Reagan spoke at CPAC no less than 13 times throughout his lifetime, including at the inaugural CPAC convention in 1974. We recorded a number of short interviews with conservative political candidates, activists, young people, scholars, former Reagan staffers, and a congressman to hear how Reaganism continues to impact and inspire the conservative movement. The episode that follows is a collection of excerpts from these conversations. We hope you enjoy the show, but first, a quick word on another project that the Reagan Institute is sponsoring.
Are you interested in spending the summer or fall interning and learning in the nation's capital? Look no further than the Ronald Reagan Institute's own Leadership in the American Presidency program. The deadline for the summer program has extended to April 2nd, so there's still time for applications. Fall priority deadline is April 15th. For more information, visit reaganfoundation.org/leadership.
My name is Morgan Zegers. I am the founder and CEO of Young Americans Against Socialism. We're a 501c3 nonprofit that makes educational videos for social media.
I'm Brad Johnson. I'm president of Americans for Intelligence Reform.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards. I'm the editor at BearingArms.com, the host of Cam and Company, a daily show focusing on Second Amendment news and information.
Hi, I'm Liz Harrington. I'm the national spokesperson for the Republican National Committee.
I am Robert Charles, and I am the national spokesperson for AMAC, A-M-A-C, which is the Conservative Americans over the age of 50. Great organization, easy to join, just Google them. But I worked in Reagan's White House in 1981, 82, and 83.
I served as a White House Associate Political Director from 1985. To 1988.
I'm Lee Murphy. I'm running for Delaware's lone seat in the House of Representatives in 2020.
My name is Dylan Stevenson. I am seeking the Republican nomination for the House of Representatives in New York's 10th District, running against Jerry Nadler.
Daniel Wild. I am the Director of Research at the Institute of Public Affairs in Australia.
I'm Rosalind Layton. I'm a visiting fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and I also have an organization called China Tech Threat.
My name is John Hostetler, and I am with States Trust, a federalism initiative of the Texas Public Policy Foundation.
And I'm Jim Hagedorn, Congressman from Minnesota's 1st District, which is southern Minnesota, and I'm a Republican.
I'm Rick Harrison.
Hi, I'm Stephen Baldwin. What's your name again?
Christina.
Christina, you just gave me your Ronald Reagan, what is it, Official Presidential Foundation Institute pin.
I did.
Oh my gosh, I really only agreed to do this interview just because I was hoping to get a pin.
Excellent.
So you gave it to me at the beginning. I'm like, your slave. Here we go. What can I do?
Congressman, it's my understanding that you are currently wearing some Reagan socks. Is it safe to assume you're an enthusiast of the 40th president?
Yeah, the Gipper. I always say one of our finest and greatest Americans, and he made a profound influence in my life. In 1980, when he took over the White House, you know how much our country was struggling, the malaise of Jimmy Carter. And I have a button that says, I'm for Reagan all my life. Well, that's the way it was. I was 18 years old and cast my first vote for Ronald Reagan in 1980. And then I cast my second vote for my father, who was a congressman from southern Minnesota. So it's quite an election.
So when I was 6, Ronald Reagan was shot. And I remember in class, all of us writing him get well letters. And I remember coming home from school probably a month or so later, and my mom was so excited, and she says, you got a letter from the White House today. And inside was a little postcard thanking me for the well wishes and ensuring me that he's feeling better. And there at the bottom in blue pen or blue ink was the signature of Ronald Reagan. And I still possess that card. It's got the embossed White House seal on it. I've got the envelope still. My mom saved that for me until I was old enough to actually care about politics, and now it's framed and hanging up in my house, because that was like the first interaction that I ever really had with any politician. And Ronald Reagan has always been one of my favorite presidents. You know, I was old enough to be in high school when the Cold War ended, and really that was because of Ronald Reagan's strength and conviction.
President Reagan, his entry onto the national scene got a lot of us involved in politics for the first time. I was 19 in 1980 and had the opportunity to vote for President Reagan the first time I got to vote in a national election. And so his legacy is tremendous on federalism, because he was continually making reference to the fact that the federal government was too big. We all know many of the Reagan quips. You know, it's not that the government taxes too little, it's that it spends too much. And the reason why it spends too much is because it's doing many things that the Constitution doesn't provide for. So President Reagan was, you might say, for many of us, people who were young and at those times, just beginning to realize the importance of getting involved politically, that there was a distinct difference in what the federal government was authorized to do by the Constitution and everything else that the states are given authority to. So he was always dealing with a Democrat Congress, most of the times both chambers in the hands of Democrats, and so they were not really open to that. But to the extent, for example, the president was able to send more money back to people to keep in our pockets, more things could happen at the local level as a result of that. But what he did do is he inspired a lot of us ultimately to take those goals that he talked about into office.
Right.
As I served for 12 years in the House, and now as we're trying to do outside of Congress to get Congress to remember what Reagan told us about federalism.
Right. Well, Ron, you know, I'm an actor. You know, I played Secretary of Defense on House of Cards in the second season. And, you know, Ronald Reagan was an actor. And I don't know if I have the quote but I think somebody asked him one time, why should an actor be President of the United States? And I think his response, and don't hold me to this, but he says, why shouldn't the President of the United States be an actor, not be an actor? So
that's great.
And those skills as an actor really did him well as the President of the United States. He connected with people.
I think one of the coolest things for me now, Stephen Baldwin, the actor, Hollywood guy, I'm really more focused now on doing some charity stuff, philanthropy, stuff for veterans. But the one thing I loved about Reagan, and I believe, in my opinion, this is a very similar kind of parallel part of the existence of President Trump, which is even when Reagan wasn't perfect and right and he didn't say the line right or da-da-da-da-da, he wore his heart on his sleeve. Ronald Reagan was authentically a regular Joe, emotional guy, would cry over something sad, you know, if something happened to our troops or this or that. So I just think that it's kind of fun to be actor, Republican, conservative guy now and look at the landscape of some of these presidencies that have existed before us. But somebody said to me here at CPAC, you know, Trump, this, that, you support him, you know, do you think he's the best president ever? I said, no, I don't think he's the best president ever. I think he's probably one of the best. We've had 3 or 4 or 5 pretty dang good ones, and Ronald Reagan's on that list. You know, Ronald Reagan was just a guy that let his heart lead him instead of just his head and his emotions. He actually kind of let his emotions lead him a little bit, but it's that passion. It was that authenticity. It was that transparency. It was that humanity that allowed him to get the Berlin Wall taken down. You know, just there was just this common sense, logical Reagan-ness that he related to people.
Throughout your years on Pawn Stars, have you ever had any Reagan-related artifacts?
As a matter of fact, I'm still getting it checked out. One of these days, I'll get it completely figured out. When Reagan was in the army during World War II, you know, he couldn't fly because the sight wasn't good enough. But he did do, and basically when he was an actor during World War II, so he did training videos and other things like that. So it was a great little training video he did where he was acting as a fighter pilot. I have his fighter pilot helmet.
there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's great. So you're obviously...
At least we think it says, because it says Lieutenant R. Reagan in it.
Right. Okay.
There was only like 20-some people in the entire Army during World War II are Reagan. Only four of them were officers.
Okay.
And as far as all my research, Reagan was the only one who did something even remotely with an airplane. So.
Well, television was coming along, and he got this offer from General Electric to be their spokesman on the show. But in addition to that, they sent him all around America to give speeches at these GE plants. Well, he's a good listener. He was a good listener. So he's listening to all of these tales of GE people struggling to deal with the government. So he starts putting it into what we came to call on the staff the speech. And, you know, if you were with him, I mean, he knew it by heart, but he'd reach in his side pocket, pull out these, you know, 5x7 or 3x5 cards, put them down and off and running. And it was some version of the same thing all of the time, but about, you know, the most threatening words in the English language were, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And he really knew his stuff, and it evolved, and he became a real conservative and started giving these speeches about conservatism. And he was at an event somewhere in California, and this woman stands up in the audience, this is like 1962 or so, and says, you know, Mr. Reagan, you talk about this all the time, you sound like you've become a Republican. I'm a registrar from your county, and I have the forms here.
Okay.
And he says, bring them up. And on the spot, he changed his registration. So goes the tale.
So I was on the domestic policy staff. I was a temporary appointee working with a guy named Roger Porter, who was a pivotal domestic policy guy with President Reagan. And one of the nice things about that period of time is that, you know, Reagan was a charming individual, and he really cared about his people. He cared about individual staffers, many of whom, like me, were young. And he shaped us. He shaped our thinking.
How did he shape your thinking?
I think he shaped it both in terms of ideology and conservative sort of individual liberty-oriented thinking. He also gave us a kind of a perspective, I would say, on life. He was self-deprecating. He was funny. He did not take himself that seriously. He took everything he was doing seriously. In many ways, for me, he also shaped very, very, very markedly my view toward the Soviet Union. I later traveled behind the Iron Curtain, worked with some people who were trying to change things inside the Soviet Union, Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, and Yugoslavia. And I will tell you that Reagan was so spot on in so many ways. There are so many stories that... I'll give you one story. I was in Poland. None of this ever hit the press. I was in Poland having worked in Reagan's White House as a temporary appointee, and I was very much acculturated to the idea that the totalitarian Soviet state and communism were wrong. And so I was in there, and I was working a little bit with, during a period of time off and on when I was at Oxford University, I was spending some time with some of the underground leaders of the Solidarity movement. And so they took me to Gdańsk and Gdynia, where Wałęsa was, and there was a tremendous, I'll call it a rally, but it was really, it started at a church, and it went to the shipyards with thousands and thousands of people. And I was there with one of the 9 Solidarity leaders and his family, and I said, what's going on? And they said, well, it was a Sunday, and they're protesting. They're going to the shipyards, where there was a gigantic cross that was erected, and they're coming from the church, Catholic community, and I started to listen really closely to what was being said, and it sounded, I could hear the name Reagan, and even though it was Polish, and I said, so what are they saying? And she looked at me, the daughter of the Solidarity leader, and she said, it was like 10,000 people. She said, they're shouting, Reagan will show you, Reagan will show you, Reagan will show you. This is in Soviet-controlled 1982 under martial law, Poland, and he did show them.
So you're obviously a history buff.
Yeah.
You've talked at length about the threat of socialism, and socialism obviously is fairly popular amongst young people in this country right now. Wondering if you could talk about the importance of teaching history to young people and how that may have gotten us to where we are today.
The left just teaches, wants to change history and just talk about what a terrible country we are. Okay, nobody's perfect. Everyone's got bad things in their past and everything else like that. But the founding fathers of this country were amazing men. Okay? They think about it. I mean, like George Washington. Most people don't know this. He was the richest man in the United States. As a percentage of GDP, he was worth $25 billion.
Jeez.
And this man risked everything. I mean, he could have continued to live an amazing life. You know, being the richest man in the United States, you would have had a pretty amazing life. But he risked it all for the right thing.
Right.
And along with all the other founding fathers. Because remember, if we lost, they'd all been executed.
Yeah.
Okay? And probably in a pretty brutal manner, because they didn't have that whole cruel and unusual punishment thing in England. So, and we don't teach any of this.
Right.
You know, they're currently, you know, we have an education system ran by the teachers union, and we teach the kids me, 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 me. So remember, JFK in 1961 says, "What you know, don't ask what you can do for your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country." Now every every Democratic candidate is like, "Oh, we'll give you this, 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 and this. Just vote for us." Where it's completely undeliverable. In the end, it's all undeliverable. It'll just make life a nightmare for everybody.
How does Reagan impact what you guys do at Young Americans Against Socialism?
Well, he's probably one of the most important figures in the fight against socialism. Just, I mean, I see every Instagram page posting Reagan quotes almost every day. And what I do in all my speeches, I talk about my favorite Reagan quote, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, where you are one generation away from losing freedom. It's very fragile. It's a very fragile thing. And I think we're at that point in our country where we did not properly educate our generation on how socialist leaders come to power. I think obviously people have problems with the education system, but I think in this one specific issue of America versus socialism, like CPAC, that's the theme, we weren't properly explained that Fidel Castro, Stalin, Lenin, we were taught that they were bad, evil dictators, but we were not properly explained to that they came to power as Marxist socialists that promised the people that they would champion the working class and that they would stand up against the evil rich people and they would promise a more free and fair and equal society. And it just never comes to fruition. The result is that they are evil dictators that starve their people and their people suffer. And so that connection wasn't made in the classroom. And I think that's really how we ended up here, where we could elect a socialist in a few months.
I think any conservative sort of born in the aftermath, you know, who wasn't there in the 1980s remembers Reagan as kind of the pinnacle of what conservatism was. And so certainly I you know, look back fondly on kind of, you know, him as the benchmark of what conservatives should try and strive towards.
Right. So what exactly do you think it is that Reagan stood for?
Reagan, I think primarily, and this is, so as you can tell from my accent, I'm from the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. I consider him as, you know, the American side of Thatcher's coin, as it were. So to me, the two of them stood firmly against Soviet communism. And the tyranny that espoused. And for me, when I think of Reagan's legacy, I think, you know, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I think of him at the Reagan Ranch with Mikhail Gorbachev. I think of that, the end of the Cold War. And that to me is really the long enduring part of Reagan's legacy, the ending of that dark chapter of human history.
Looking back to the day of Reagan, obviously the international challenge of that era was the Soviet Union. And Reagan was always a strong advocate of highlighting the importance of the ideological component of that competition, right? So it wasn't just a case of geopolitics. It wasn't just the case that we could peacefully coexist. There was a real moral dimension to that competition. Wondering if you look to today's time, and I'm not suggesting that we're in a Cold War, but do you think that there is a moral or ideological component to our competition with China today?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Chinese communists, these are still the guy. The guy who's in charge in China right now is the fifth in line after Chairman Mao. Chairman Mao murdered something like 30 million Chinese. I mean, these guys, they don't care about people. They have a philosophy that everyone and everything belongs to the party, where the state has control over absolutely everything. Here in the United States of America, basically, now liberals would like to undermine this, but basically we have a philosophy where the individual has rights, and that the freedom of the individual is paramount, and that the government of the United States works for the people, not the other way around. So we're at absolute extreme odds with the Chinese Communist Party. And let me mention about Reagan. I was hired into the CIA under Reagan, and my certificate at home is signed by Ronald Reagan. Now, probably by a machine, but at least it's his a facsimile of his signature. So I'm very proud of that and have it hanging on the wall prominently in my house right now.
No kidding.
Now, Reagan did something that that we're beginning to see Trump perhaps emulate. And what he did, as everyone knows, famously, he brought down the Berlin Wall. Well, what does that really mean? It was more than just a wall. It was the fall of the Soviet Union. And how did he do that? He cut off all of the ways that they were making money on their side, because their economy sucked, because it was a central controlled economy like the Chinese do, where they're making all their decisions based on politics, not economics. And so the economy just never ran very well. So they had to basically abscond with large amounts of money from all over the world. Ronald Reagan saw that, understood it, cut it all off. He integrated his policy, foreign policy, with his domestic economic policy, and that cut off the funds to the Soviet Union. And then he continued to ramp up pressure by building up the U.S. military, and he brought them to their knees. He just destroyed them using those using that methodology. And that's precisely what we need to emulate today against the Chinese. Most people don't realize they're funding a lot of their projects in China on the U.S. stock exchange, and they're not faced with their reporting requirements like the U.S. companies are, so they're getting away with a lot of stuff. For example, the company that produces some of the control equipment in China, where they have cameras now, even in little villages, that follow the movement and activities of all of their population. Mm-hmm. All of their population. There are 50 million of these cameras in China, and they have facial recognition and analysis of what people do, and each of these people are issued an individual grade as to their reliability
right.
and trustworthiness to the Communist Party.
I believe there are parallels. Reagan had the moral clarity to take on the Soviet Union and to take on the foreign policy establishment, right? Mm-hmm. Tear down this wall. They didn't want that line in, and he said, no, we're putting it in. I'm the president, it goes in. And that's one of the defining features of Reagan's presidency, the moral clarity. This is a bit of a controversial view, I think, but I think some people are coming there. I think Trump will be to China what Reagan was to the Soviet Union, because Trump has elevated the challenges of China from, say, number 20 or number 25 to the top five priority. Now, we're talking about it now. 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been talking about China. So Australia has a complicated relationship because we're very economically dependent upon China.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, we're a very resource-intensive economy. We export a lot of our resources over there. It's been great for our economy. But, you know, they are a totalitarian communist regime. They do seek, like all growing powers, to shape the global order around their interests and their values. And so there is a challenge. And so, yes, there are parallels between the Soviet Union and China. The difference is China has had the economic liberalization,
yep.
whereas the Soviet Union didn't. They've still got the political repression,
mm-hmm.
but the Soviet Union did not open up. And when it did, it collapsed, mm-hmm. whereas China has so far managed to have perestroika without the glasnost, or the glasnost without the perestroika, right? They've had the economic freedom without the political freedom. So that's one of the key differences.
I mean, our relationship with China, I think we've been a little soft on that for a long time. I mean, they look at us as big trading partners, which we're really adversaries in all these things, military, trade, and then around the world, the ideology of communism and what they offer. And so I'm glad that we're standing up to them finally. The trade situation should have been dealt with 10 or 20 years ago by presidents of other parties. It shouldn't have taken President Trump to do that. And I think starting to stand up to them militarily and through foreign policy is making a difference. But yeah, communism is a system of government which deprives people of their liberty. It takes away human life and value in many ways, and we should never support that. And we shouldn't support elements of socialism around the world either. And President Reagan was quite an outspoken critic of socialism. He warned us about it, and I think we should heed his wise words, and we'll have a better world for it.
Wondering how you came to your conservatism and how you might use that story or narrative or whatever it is that persuaded you to talk to other people our age.
Well, I think that, again, I came to Reagan through Thatcher, and my conservatism comes from the English tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Reagan, again, Reagan and Thatcher melded so well together in their stand economically for personal liberty and free enterprise as being the drivers of human prosperity. domestically, and they they took a lot of licks for doing that. I think that courage and that backbone that they showed, willing to handle whether it was the press or, in Thatcher's case, certainly the unions. And Reagan also had union problems here, but to a different extent, being able to take those slings and arrows and to actually go forward anyway and win and succeed and prove that actually this is correct. And again, on the international stage, when kind of the world was buckling under, whether it was the Cold War in general or Soviet advancements, where they were in Afghanistan, they were in Africa, they were in Asia. And Reagan and Thatcher stood strong. And so really, in terms of what I can do in my campaign, it's emulate that spine. It's the, Margaret Thatcher said, you turn if you want to, the lady's not for turning. Well, in this case, the gentleman would not be for turning. To show that kind of resolve in defense of one's principles, I think that is the thing that I can apply most directly from both of them.
Well, so I'm from upstate New York, and I don't know if you know much about upstate, but it is we have the highest state and local tax burden in the country. We have an incredibly corrupt government, incredibly corrupt. And so I grew up, I worked at a diner, I worked at a golf course, I worked at restaurants and bars and all the fun odd jobs, worked at a car service shop. And as I was becoming a taxpayer for the first time and experiencing that, I was also seeing in the local papers a bunch of pay-to-play stories with Governor Cuomo, and it was really, it had an impact on me because I wasn't political, but I really was frustrated that I was paying taxes into a corrupt system that was misusing and disrespecting my taxpayer dollars. And so all I wanted out of that was just an ethical, responsible government that respected the work that we all put in. And I think that's how I became a conservative. My dad is also a colonel in the military. He served in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And so in high school, I was in the Veterans of Foreign Wars Ladies Auxiliary as an officer. And I did all the parades, I did all the meetings and everything. And that's what got me into community advocacy.
Curious, what do you think conservatives should be pitching to people who are young and who may not necessarily share those ideas?
Yeah, it's a great question. I have a little bit of a different view on it. So we have a very big youth outreach program at the Institute of Public Affairs. It's called Generation Liberty. Mm-hmm. So we have a presence on university campuses around Australia. And we've done a lot of surveys and analysis of the attitudes that young people have. And we found that they're very positive about the future. They're very entrepreneurial. They're very focused. 60% want to start their own business. 98% want to start their own house. Own their own home. They are very much, their values and their beliefs are broadly what we would consider conservative. They might not call themselves conservative, but they want the room and the opportunity to be able to live flourishing lives. And we know, whether it's Reagan, whether it's Trump, whether it's whoever else in the conservative movement, we know that the values that we have and the policies that we advocate are what are going to allow young people to reach their goals. So we just need to communicate that in a positive way. It's all about being positive and energetic about the future, because I believe our future is very bright and young people want to be inspired about their future. They don't want doomsday stories. They want a positive, bright vision of the future, and that's how we engage them.
Young people today are looking for what young people have always looked for, and that is a cause, something bigger than themselves. And I think Republicans, I think conservatives, we might do ourselves a disservice when we think that we have to give something up to the next generation, when in fact many folks in the next generation, I have children in the next generation, I have grandchildren that are coming into that time period in their lives. And they want something to fight for. They want something worth fighting for. And they don't necessarily need everything given to them. This continuation of what the framers, of what our political ancestry gave us, is something worth fighting for. And if we can package that, if we have enough faith and confidence in the work of Washington and Madison and Hamilton, which we should have. When we have that confidence in their genius, that's something that catches. It caught on to me when I was 19 years old. I think I'm not that different. I wasn't that different when I was 19 than 19-year-olds today. So I think we just need to give them something to reach for.
The reality of what's going on the left right now with socialism and government, will take care of everything. I think when young people, like my son, he just graduated from college, he's out in the working world, and he's successful. And he understands it's what you put into it, what you get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that most young people today, when they see that socialism is a way of basically giving everything and having the government take care of you, it takes away the initiative of the individual. And I don't think most young people today want their initiative taken away from them, and certainly not by the government.
I think young voters, they want a job just like the rest of us, right? The economy is an important issue to all Americans. And when you look at the differences between the Obama-Biden years and the stagnation, and I graduated college during those years, there's such a difference coming out into the job market now. And it's hugely important. And so young people are usually very passionate, and you understand why they might be open to an idea of, oh, let's have a revolution and all these things. But when you actually talk about the ideology that Bernie Sanders and the rest of the Democrats are pushing, and you talk about how it's been tried and failed everywhere, and you contrast the values.
Yeah, and this is something that I really struggled with in the beginning, because I didn't understand the virality of what I was making, the videos. I had no idea it was going to launch so well. And so we launched in August 2019. We got 1 million views in 24 hours, 45 million impressions in a month. I had no expectations of that. And it's because average Americans that already lean right were so excited to see young Americans step up and combat socialism, because everybody assumes millennials love socialism and eat our avocado toast and do all the same stereotypes. And so they were just excited to see us. But even though we went viral, I was very excited about that. But it's not our target audience. Our target audience is the center, middle of the road, even left-leaning Americans that believe socialism is just achieving social equality and getting a more moral and fair and equal society. And so those are the people I want to reach. That's why I'm trying to be more creative with our messaging. Instead of hanging out on Twitter where everybody is just yelling at each other and nobody's there to change their mind, I'm targeting Instagram, because that's where the non-political average Americans are spending most of their time on social media, especially the people in Gen Z and the millennial generation.
We had discussed before you came on that this is your first time back in a few years.
Yeah.
Do you notice the different energy now than a few years ago? I mean, it's probably the liveliest CPAC I've seen. So, I mean, we may not be the greatest generation, you know, but...
No, but that's the wake-up I'm talking about. You are the greatest generation. You know what I mean? You're the greatest generation to come. Because you will be the ones that defend all this after we see a social and a cultural change going forward.
You've talked at length about Reagan's character, his values, the man he was.
Yes.
Do you think Reaganism, you know, the movement, the philosophy, the ideology, mm-hmm. is that a movement that still exists today?
You bet. It is at the heart of what most Americans know is right. And I will tell you, they often say Reagan was elected on six words: smaller government, lower taxes, strong defense. It is also true that he had an extraordinary moral compass from which he did not part. He was not a preacher or a preachy person.
I think it's crucially still important what Ronald Reagan and his legacy. When I think of Ronald Reagan, I think a happy warrior. And I think of the principles and values that he restored, this Reagan Revolution, which was kind of a realignment. And it's similar to what we're kind of seeing today, which is... when government and the left goes too far, you have a reaction. And I think in many ways, what happened with the Reagan Revolution, and because he was a Democrat, and what did mm-hmm. he say? My party left me.
Yep.
I didn't leave my party left me. And I think a lot of that's going on too, what happened in the 60s and 70s, just this counterculture and hysteria and... allowing Reagan to come in. I mean, the reaction to Carter in a lot of ways was very similar to Barack Obama. He got two terms, but the growing government, the weakness abroad. And so when you think about the three-legged stool of conservatism that Reagan really defined, those values are still very important to our party. And a hugely important president, and I think we're having a similar moment right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Donald Trump isn't Ronald Reagan, right? I mean, no two people are alike and all of that kind of thing. But in terms of the actual things that Ronald Reagan did do and wanted to do, cut taxes, put conservatives on the Supreme Court, put conservatives on the federal bench, peace through strength, yes, it's that's Reaganism to me.
He was an incredibly influential and important president, you know, serving those two terms, winning the re-election that he did in the way that he did in 1984, you know, now if somebody wins election by 10 votes, they say, oh, I've got a mandate. Ronald Reagan swept the country, right? He lost Minnesota, and what was the other state? I think he lost two states.
Yes, and I can't remember.
District, okay, so Minnesota and the District of Columbia. I mean, imagine a politician in this country today being able to have that type of influence, mm-hmm. right? And we were just as divided, or at least we were divided back then. It's not that, you know, we had 48 states that were conservative or Republican dominated. It was just that he was able to capture, I think, the hearts and the minds of the American people, and was, I think, maybe our last truly beloved president. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, you could find the Tip O'Neills and the folks who would go after Ronald Reagan. But I think the American people genuinely loved him in the White House.
For me, Ronald Reagan embodied, you know, the optimism of the future, but also the kind of toughness. You know, he stood up to the Soviet Union. He said, you know, to tear down the wall. He did so many things like that. And what I wish for today's youngsters, you know, we really felt concerned about the Cold War, and we took it seriously. We had a class of communism versus capitalism. We actually learned that in schools. They don't teach that anymore, but we learned about that. And, you know, I think lost that. I'm glad Reaganism is back to help bring that back to folks today.
Reagan's philosophy also involved service, love of country, unbridled patriotism with an understanding of history. And if you appreciate history, and if you appreciate what made this country what it is and all the sacrifice, and he would walk through Arlington National Cemetery with an understanding of the very generation of which he was a part that many of them lay there, you suddenly understand that our duty is to the future. Our duty is to love this country with everything we've got, because an awful lot of this country died in order for us to be able to do that.